Hey, Colin.
Yeah, Cadence.
Do you like media and entertainment that's badass?
Duh.
Do you like media and entertainment that's bitchin'?
Yeah.
And how about a little bonkers?
Hills, yeah, throw that in there.
Then I think you might like this thing called the Baywatch Rewatch.
Oh, God. Are you trying to promote the podcast I'm actively doing with you right now?
A little bit. Is it working?
Cool intro. All right. Well,
let's get started.
Let's get into it, guys. Man, I'm still thinking about methed out boa constrictor from last week and trying to figure out, you know, if everything's okay.
Can you
with
imagine
him.
How fast that snake is slithering around the office?
I am giggling at so bad. I was listening to the last episode and I was just like, man, that would be awful to have a gacked out freaking boa constrictor going around your office, killing all of your.
Sounds like a dream come
mates.
True.
So going off that, today's episode, man, Katie, tell them what we got.
Well, we got a real interesting duo of plot lines here. The first plot line is someone, a mysterious woman, comes back into TC's life from his past. And guys, she's bringing a lot of baggage and a lot of trouble with her.
Oh boy, and, boy howdy. She's coming with a lot to unpack and she's beautiful and mysterious.
So beautiful. And so the second thing is, guys, this is the episode where Del Toro comes out of the closet.
I don't know. We are still pushing for him to live his truth. And man, during Pride Month, this would be a great time for him to just live himself. Because, okay, well, the second plot line is Del Toro is in this competitive boxing match for the annual lifeguard games that a character named Mackie Smith is really obnoxious about. And we learn a little bit about Del Toro's past, and boy, oh boy, does he say some things that really confirm our thoughts.
I feel like we are right on track. I feel like we saw Del Toro from a mile away. Yep. We knew this day was coming, and we'll play those audio. Okay, before we admit we were sort of like really reaching, but this episode, guys, I don't have to reach at all. My arm's not stretched even in the slightest. It is very clearly here.
I'm going to give you a little spoiler. He makes an actual comment that is, all I used to think about was hitting a guy. And now all I can think about is a guy hitting me. And he says it in this really weird way. And you kind of just look at the twinkle in his eye. And I think you know what that means.
And his tight tucked in tank is back. And his lovely gold chain is also back.
They make another appearance.
So you know what? He's in all of his glory. And we love you, Del Toro. You're our hero.
Katie, have you ever had a mysterious person come back in your life?
That's a good question.
Like a random friend just texts you and be like, hey, and then it turns out that they're just totally mysterious and come with a lot of baggage and you want to get out of that stitch.
Oh, I had a crazy acquaintance in New Mexico who she would. Okay, have you ever known anybody who's like a habitual liar that just for no reason other than their mouth is moving that they have to tell you a lie, even though nothing is like, there's no situation requiring the lie? Like she would tell me crazy stuff like that, like she went to the hospital and had food poisoning and the doctors at the hospital sifted through her vomit and found out that it was a piece of cheese she ate. And I'm like, no doctors sift through your vomit
no,
at the ER.
Girl, that did not happen. And come on, who do you think we are?
Completely devolved. And at one point she told me she had pancreatic cancer. And pancreatic cancer is like,
that's almost, no joke.
You're
it's
gonna
a big
die.
Deal.
Yeah, like
it's
it is
a big deal.
You cannot recover. It's very rare to like make a recovery go into remission. So she told me she had pancreatic cancer and that she was just trying to make herself comfortable until she passed away. And I was like, I knew it wasn't true, but I was also like, I don't want to be wrong if it is true. And she was like, anyway, long story short, we ended up getting into this massive fight because I knew she was lying eventually. I'm just like, why are you doing this? This is so stupid. Like, it was so stupid. And she started spreading all these weird rumors. And I felt like I was in high school because I'm like, I'm not even engaging in this. Like, what are you even doing?
She's just lying about you. She's just like, and then Katie ran over me with her bike and spilled milk on me. I don't know where I was going with that, but you know, she lied about you.
But I totally forgot this until you said that, because she wanted to meet me at a park to, like, quote, talk it out. And I was like, nothing to talk out, right?
Yeah, at a park. So
I took Jed with me and she brought her husband, because I was like, I need someone here just in case, because at this point she was super batshit. And she started, like, screaming at me. So I was like, okay, bye. Like, I don't know what I thought this was going to be. I thought you were going to be a grown up. I leave. She lays down in the dirt at the playground and starts rolling around in the dirt and screaming. So
fun story.
It was, I totally forgot about it until just now, but it was so batshit. And then here's the kicker. Mason, our little brother, was living in the same town as me at the time, and he called me and he was like, this person in the meantime was, like, trying to get in good with Mason. Like, it was really weird. I think she had a crush on him. And so she calls him and she goes, your sister just attacked me at a park. And she attacked me so brutally that I passed out in the sand and woke up and didn't know where I was.
Oh, geez. Okay, and so he's like, just to make sure, this mysterious woman came into your life from your past, made up a bunch of lies, said you attacked her because she was trying to get into our younger brother's heart.
Yes.
That's kind of that's a mysterious person from your past storyline. I mean, to roll around in the dirt and say that you were attacked, that's next level. That's commitment there to the role.
So then I just immediately cut ties. I was just like, I'm never engaging in this again. And then months later, she resurfaced. This is what made me think of it when you asked. And she sent me a Facebook message and was like, I know that there's nothing I can say, but after spending months in a women's shelter and recovering from domestic violence. So she gave me this whole story and I'm like, I knew her husband. Like, she couldn't even apologize and tell me the truth. Like, it became this whole other weird story. And I just immediately blocked her on everything because she had changed her name on social media, like everything.
Poor,
and I immediately just blocked her. Yeah. I was like, I'm not doing this. I'm very sorry, and God bless you in your struggles, but I refuse to engage. End.
Hope she gets the help she needs. That was a really depressing story.
It gets weirder, but I'm not going to even begin to go
there. I've never had anybody like that. I can't even think of anybody. Nobody, except for those, like, random hookups that you have that somehow get your number, like, years later. But I can say that I did have somebody that I was not dating, that I was just casually seeing, schedule a professional meeting through a professional website with the person that I was wanting and currently dating, and then proceeded to tell him that I had no heart and I was awful and in a business meeting. And poor guy, the guy that I was dating, was like, I really wanted that job. It sounded like a good job.
Oh no! And then it just turned.
He got professionally job catfished. He didn't care about what the guy said because he didn't believe it. But at the same time, he's like, I just really wanted that job. I don't care if he said that you were, like, this awful murderous person. Anyway, we'll get back to the story. So let's get into it. All right, another beautiful day, midday, of course, in Santa Ana, Huntington Beach. And we see this beautiful gal that we've never seen before, and she's just working her little heart out at a restaurant.
She's a tall drink of water.
She's a tall drink of water on a hot day, and she's just working her little heart out. She's a waitress and going around at, guess where it's at? Guess where she's waitressing at? Waterfront Bar and Grill.
Obviously. But Sheila's nowhere to be found.
Where's Sheila? Come on, Sheila. You got a new employee and you don't even know. So this mysterious woman is walking around, and again, midday, this skater guy, who I will say, just picture a young Chandler Bing, he enters through the back of this restaurant establishment. Who knows how he got a key, how he got in, walks up right to the till and takes money, right? Just right up, goes behind the counter, takes money.
Can we also, just for a quick second, talk about how many crimes are committed on rollerblades in the show?
Oh, like, my gosh, that was a big thing I forgot to say, you guys. Not only does he break in through the back of this establishment, he goes straight to the till and he is on rollerblades, like, he's doing this, like, skating through the kitchen, like, moving past people.
Just like, I mean, there have been so many criminals on rollerblades. There have been pickpockets on rollerblades, boa constrictors on rollerblades,
it's because
the thief on rollerblades, and they're so fast that the police on bikes can never catch them.
Well, I was going to say, that's where they have to do it, because our elite bike cop team, if they were on foot, they would for sure have no excuse. They would have to get them. But if they put them on rollerblades, there's maybe a chance that they can get away. So exactly. Every criminal is on rollerblades. So moving forward, just imagine every criminal on rollerblades. So he goes in, he takes this money, and of course, they get the call immediately. Our five bike cops, Chris, Kelly, and TC, get the call that someone's been robbed, and they're at the scene. They do an epic...
Fast.
Oh, fast. Needless to say, they catch Chandler Bing, they bring him back, and turns out that the woman who called in is the woman that TC knows.
So, yeah, so this guy, this rollerblade bandit, has robbed the restaurant that we saw our tall drink of water at. And so when they go to take some statements from the people who were there.
TC? TC Calloway?
Rebecca?
Look at you. Last time I saw you, you were
in blue flannel.
Yeah, so he takes her statement and Chris is like, okay, well, I'm going to leave you two, too, and I'm just going to take this guy in. Take your time. So TC and Rebecca, she just leaves her job midday, just walks off with TC, starts as a criminal, like a statement to the police as a witness of a crime, ends in, oh, these people had a very serious relationship, and they know each other, and had lots of sex together.
Yeah,
and
it was
rekindled.
It was hot and heavy. Let's just say that. You can tell. They had a
it
very
starts
sexual
as like,
relationship.
It's trauma. She's like, I saw this crime being committed, da-da-da-da-da. It ends with them making out on the beach, like within the same conversation. Like, I haven't seen you in 10 years. And then they make out, and then she's like, I guess I got to get back to work.
I know. She just takes some time. Well, I guess they just get robbed. Maybe she was like, needed a minute to calm down. But in this conversation,
TC, calm you right down.
Right. And in this conversation, TC's like, where were you? How are you here? And she's like,
I've known Stan forever. He needed a manager and I needed some cash until I could get a job in the jewelry district.
They love districts in this. You guys, I've never said, well, there is the only thing I will say is that there is a design district, I guess, in San Francisco, and like a financial district. But nobody's saying you know, I don't know. Nobody says that. I don't know. Maybe in the 90s, it was a thing to say, like, you lived in the district instead of your neighborhood. You were like, I live in the park district. Lots of parks.
Let's bring it back.
So that's her goal.
Suburb district.
She basically was a really hot model in New York. That all, you know, looks fade. That tall glass of water faded.
And she says to him, like, you know, you get a lot of context about their relationship in this conversation. I mean, never mind that she's just been robbed. Like, that takes a real backseat real quickly.
Look, TC, I know that the last time I saw you...
That's ancient history, though. Okay? You don't have to apologize.
Very quickly, yes. You understand that she broke TC's heart, left him high and dry. He gives zero fucks. He's like, I really don't care. Let's just kiss.
Always kissing TC, man. He's always getting his game on.
He gets so much play, and I truly do not get it.
I mean,
I truly do
sometimes
not.
I'm like, oh, he's attractive. And then sometimes I'm like, no, he's not. But for 90s, he was probably the belle of the ball. 90s hot for sure.
90s.
He was 90s hot for sure. So anyway, they leave
like
that.
Like when they do, when you say like, oh, it was 10 cents in 1930 and with inflation, it's now $10. Mm-hmm. It's like with hot inflation, maybe not so much now, but definitely peak
and
currency in the 90s.
I just have something to say too. Like, don't you think in the 90s that people were like, not that this is a negative thing, but they were always looked a little bit older. Like, I think the way they styled them and their makeup, and I know that plastic surgery has come a long way in Botox, but like, I feel like without all that, they just naturally look a little older. Like, TC looks older than his character, and so does Chris. Yes. Chris Kelly, they all look a little bit older. And like, we watched the Friends reunion the other day. I never really watched Friends, but Alex loves Friends so much.
Oh, my, Elliot and Addie are obsessed.
Oh, they
Friends.
Wanted to watch it the whole time I was there. They
yeah,
love
and the whole
it.
Time during the reunion, Elliot was screaming, like he was so happy. It was really funny.
Right. So they were doing like flashbacks. And by the way, I was thinking that it was going to be like a reunion episode, like, oh, they're all right. Like 10 years later, but it's actually just like them coming together and talking about it. But A, everybody looked great. The cast now looks great, but they were doing flashbacks. And I'm like, everybody just looked older. They were supposed to be like 22 and 24. Yeah. And they just looked older. I don't know how to explain it, but looking, doing the flashback, I'm like, well, maybe they did look pretty young. I don't know what I'm going with that, but everyone in the 90s looked a little bit older. Claire Danes, my so-called
life.
She looked like 25.
She was 13 when they filmed the first episode of that.
That is wild.
And Jared Leto was like 21.
You have a 13-year-old son. Can you imagine?
That's no, wild. That's really crazy. I hadn't even thought about that. Oh,
that's crazy. But she looked a little older. She looked a lot more mature because she had that dark hair. Anyway, let's get back to the story. So TC and this new mysterious woman named Rebecca, who just got robbed but made out with them, but they obviously had sex in the past, they leave and their time goes by. So Palermo is not casually riding his bike. Cadence gets mad if I say casually because Palermo is laser focused.
There's not pleasure involved.
Never. Unless he's beating his wife Sheila at a competition, a biking competition.
Well, even that, it's not pleasure. It's just he is competing. He still is laser focused on something.
That's very
true.
Once
his ass hits that bike seat, he is on one.
So he's laser focused on finding crime. And then who does he bump into other than the cocky ass lifeguard Mackie Smith? And we are, as soon as I said it, it sounded like I said lifeguard Maggie Smith, and I just got this like image in my head of like, oh, B, you are, why are you so ruined by my sexuality? Like, just could you imagine Maggie
just
Smith
totally
being a lifeguard
traipsing the beaches in that bathing suit? She's a big hat.
She's pure Downton Abbey, just like, oh, what is a weekend? Like, just so that image went through my head, and it was so funny. Anyway, continue. Sorry.
So we are introduced to Mackie Smith, Mackie, CK.
My word.
A, I'm surprised we've never seen him around these parts. B, I'm also simultaneously relieved that we have never seen him around before. And I hope that we never see him after this episode because he is a dickhole.
Yeah, he's a giant dickhole. And he's kind of like vaguely Hawaiian. I don't know what they were doing with his character instead of just casting an actual Hawaiian person. Because he kind of has this weird like accent, like, hey, brah. And he's wearing a puka shell necklace. And he's gross, you guys.
So every year there's this competition that happens amongst the civil servants of this particular region in California, the lifeguards, the cops, and the firemen. And Mackie Smith is shit-talking Palermo like crazy because he's like, hey, we're going to kick your guys' ass just like we do every year. And he says,
look, man, all I'm trying to do here is prove Mackie Smith's theory of civil service evolution, which states that cops can beat firemen at any sport, but lifeguards prevail overall.
What the fuck does that even mean, Mackie? Like, that doesn't even make any sense.
Look, I'll tell you what. You pick any sport that you want. Any sport will make the usual bet.
And Palermo has a great idea.
He's gonna, little ding, 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 little boxing noise goes off in his head. And he's gonna say, I'm picking boxing because we learned that Del Toro, old Vicky Del Toro, used to be a semi-professional boxer. And Palermo is stoked to have to be able to pick this and choose Del Toro to be the boxing champion.
Can we also just talk about what the prize of the winning bet is? What happens when you win this bet? What's the prize?
Oh my gosh, actually, I don't know. What is the prize?
How about a month of Sunday dinners at Hal's? You're up to something.
Oh my gosh, yes. I do know that. That is so perfect, you guys. The winner gets free dinners every Sunday.
So 4 weeks for 4 days.
So for 4 days, they get free dinner. I don't know from where, like Olive Howls. Garden.
Open house.
So just to be clear,
obviously,
this is an elite bike cop team and they go ape shit for this competition so that they can win 4 free dinners. And it's probably not all 5 of them. Only Del Toro will win these 4 free dinners at Howl's. Oh my God. So they stop working. They don't care about crime, anything. It's just like Del Toro has to fucking win this competition. We need that Hal's dinner.
And it's really funny to keep this in mind. Like this whole episode, you guys just keep reminding yourselves they're fighting for Sunday dinners at Hal's for a month because it gets really heated and a lot of pressure gets put on Del Toro.
Oh, yeah.
And it gets really, like, he goes on an emotional journey because he's revisiting, like, his boxing days and he's not sure he wants to go back there. And I'm like, for Sunday dinners at Hal's, like, all of this triggering emotional turmoil. And Palermo's like, this is for the team, da-da-da-da-da. And I'm like, guys, just I'll buy you dinner. It's fine. Don't worry about it. I'll take you to his house on Sunday. I promise. Don't make Del Toro relive trauma.
Well, okay, let's back up a little bit. Don't get too far ahead. So Palermo's peddling his little heart out to get back to the precinct because he is so excited to make Del Toro this boxing champion so he can win 4 free dinners at Hal's. So he is just peddling his little heart out.
Champion is a word you're using very loosely.
He gets there, and to his surprise, Del Toro is actually doing a really negative impression of him to the whole team.
I want you to understand these guys are killers, all right? I don't want anybody out there taking any chances, okay? Now, everybody wears a vest, all right? Watch yourselves, watch your partners, watch your black and whites, all right?
All right. Lieutenant, I mean, good morning, sir. I was just brushing up for Saturday Night Live.
And Palermo walks up behind him. It's that classic, like, he's behind mm-hmm. me, right? He's behind me, am I right? Mm-hmm. So Palermo walks up, and Del Toro's doing this impression, and he's, like, nailing it. And then he's like, Del Toro, come in my office. We got to talk.
All right, so he's like, I'm going to need you to do me a favor. And he also is like, I know something about you that you haven't told me personally, and I've invaded your privacy by going through your personnel file.
And as a gay man, I can say that Del Toro was probably sweating ball sacks right now. He was probably like, what is it? Me, gay porn? Nothing. What? Me, gay in the past? Did I gay porn? No. I like men? He's probably sweating bullets, but, you know.
His desk is full of pictures of naked MacGruber.
Right? Like me in high school when someone was like, hey, I know something about you. I was like, what, huh? No, you don't. You don't know me at all. Nope. Get the fuck away from me. Anyway, side note.
So, yeah, he's completely invaded his personal privacy and gone through his personnel file because he's like,
I see from your personnel file you used to box. Yeah, a little bit. A little bit. CIF champ 2 years running, golden gloves, a 23-1 record as a 20-year-old, that's a little bit. Well, yeah, that was a long time ago. To tell you the truth, I'm not much interested in the sport anymore.
Look, do you know who Mackie Smith is?
Lifeguard captain? I can't stand that guy.
Nobody can. The Santa Monica Challenge is coming up, and he's all over me with his usual bull.
Well, you know I'd do anything for this unit, Lieutenant. But I hung up my gloves a long time ago.
We gotta cue that. We should put that in the back.
Yeah, he does say that. Like, I would do anything, but I'm just not gonna do that. He basically tells Palermo, like, that is a line I'm not willing to cross. So could you please not ask me because I don't appreciate it? And Palermo's like, you know what? Mackie Smith's all over my ass. He's giving me all his bullshit. He's shit talking me all over the boardwalk. He's like, appreciate it. Sorry, Mackie Smith's a dickhole. But I would not like to participate. Down.
Yeah, stop and, freaking pressuring me, Palermo. Stop being a little, what is it? What's the word? Pusher from Mean Girls.
Pusher.
She's a pusher.
Oh, she's a pusher.
So he walks out. Del Toro leaves. He's like, I'm not having any of this. And Palermo's kind of frustrated, mm-hmm. obviously, because he wants that 4 free dinners at Hal.
He needs those dinners. Who's going to feed Palermo if it's not Hal?
Sheila sure is not. We don't know where
Sheila's
she is.
Not.
Taking care of Annette
she's
still.
She's taking care of a girl.
So later that night, we meet up with that beautiful Rebecca, that mysterious woman that TC knows from the beginning. And she's at the restaurant. It's clearly closed. It's after
where
hours.
Where she was working earlier that day and where the robbery took place, the roller skate robbery.
And she's just locking up. And as she's locking up the door, she turns around and she sees. And again, I think in Pacific Blue World, when they ask for someone to play like a negative role or like a bad role, they just pick like must be 7 foot tall, must have long luxurious hair either pulled back in a ponytail mm-hmm. or free flowing, must always wear a trench coat and kind of mm-hmm. have like this
black clothes
and kind of like well dressed a little bit. So she turns around and sure enough, long haired tall 7 foot guy, black cloak, and he pulls out a really inconspicuous weapon. You think he would pull out like a handgun or maybe just like a little silencer gun? No, full shotgun, points it right at Rebecca, shoots, but guess what
this
happens?
This is the second time, by the way, that we've had a criminal in a trench coat with a giant shotgun.
I know, guys.
Because that was also the burglars from
does
before.
Pacific Blue just think burglars. That's what burglars do is like just carry around shotguns? I mean, maybe they do. I'm not in the burgling world. The burgling world.
You don't burgle. Well, the guy who was burgling at the Hotel Chantal did not have a shotgun. Yeah. So obviously it can be done.
Yeah. Pacific Blue, just a handgun. And it's like, so they're loud and they make the most amount of mess. Mm-hmm. So you would think that a criminal would be smaller. So she's frightened. She's looking like wide-eyed, like, holy shit, I'm going to get blown away by a shotgun. And he shoots the shotgun. And guess what happens? Stan, carrying his little box of lettuce. I don't know how he didn't notice the situation at all. He didn't notice any of it.
I also don't know, why is he carrying a box of unrefrigerated lettuce?
Because it's a restaurant, obviously. And he's so committed to getting that lettuce into the refrigerator, he has no concept of what's happening around him. So he walks right in between this little altercation and gets shot with a shotgun and flies back.
Because Rebecca and the guy with the shotgun are like roughly 4 to 5 feet apart. Stan just does not even register that there's a standoff with a shotgun. He's just like, I'm just going to real quick get this lost in the fridge. Don't mind me, little guys. Just scurrying through the middle. And I'm like, Stan, I mean, just look around, like, dude.
Look around, just look around, bud. I know you're committed to running a good restaurant and you need that lettuce in the walk-in. But seriously, just be aware of your surroundings. Regardless, homeboy gets shot. He flies back. Rebecca's looking like deer in headlights. The shotgun wielding criminal shoots again, and Rebecca dives, and he shoots out the windows behind her, and she's terrified, and he makes an exit.
Immediately, Chris and TC are obviously on call. They're riding their bikes on patrol, and they get the notification over their walkies. And then TC immediately is like, well, shit, that's the restaurant that we just went to today that was robbed by the roller skater. That's Rebecca's. And so they speed back in the dead of night. It's dark. This is the only crime, I think, that takes place at night.
I know, right? And of course, they're on duty. You know, they're just casually wandering around.
Never mind, they've been on shift all day and already dealt with a robbery at this place. Nobody else could take care of this, guys. Nobody else. So they ride back, and at that exact moment, they pull up, and Rebecca comes running out, and she and TC embrace in a very sexual, very intense, very like full body, full groin contact kind of a hug.
She's like a quarterback at this point. She like runs into him, like kind of pushes him back a couple of feet. And I like how she waited until TC got there to have an emotional response to this because it's, you know, she's been sitting around for a while. And as soon as he gets there, she's like, oh my God, and crying and running around. She was planning it.
She was definitely, she wanted to run into his arms very specifically. So they take her back to the station, TC and Chris. And so at this point, they're all in the interrogation room. It's TC, Chris, and Palermo, and Rebecca. And they're asking her about the incident, what the guy looked like, what was happening. She's just worried about Stan. Like, she's also like, did that lettuce ever get to the fridge? I mean, we don't need wilted lettuce on top of all of this.
Yes, the lettuce, the smell of wilting lettuce, you guys, get in and out walk-in more than she cares about Stan. No, she is really acting very concerned about this Stan.
Mm-hmm. And she's saying, like, I don't remember anything that happened. It was dark. I couldn't get a good look at the guy. I have zero information to offer you. And Palermo's like, we've got to put, like, this seems really personal, so we've got to put you under police protection. And immediately, what does she say? Who does she want to protect her?
TC, it has to be you.
I'm afraid that's not possible.
TC, please. If you're there, I know I'll be safe.
He says, yes, it's a good idea. Palermo's like, I'm not so sure. And TC's like, listen, this is what she wants. And he's like, could I see you privately for a second? So he takes TC into his office and he's like, this seems really personal. It doesn't seem like a great idea. He's like, but we were just kids and she broke my heart. But like, this shouldn't be a reason that I don't get assigned to this duty. And he's like, it's every reason why you shouldn't be assigned to this duty. Like, this seems very messy.
This is the only time that Palermo seems like reasonable and level-headed and kind of like the dad of the group, because he's actually, normally he'd be like, let's fry her, let's kill her. No, but he's very...
But he doesn't, it does, his authoritative chief status, lieutenant status doesn't last very long, because he's like, listen, this is not a great idea. And he's like, but please. And he's like, okay.
And here's my question. So basically now TC is watching this Rebecca girl, the mysterious woman from the past, but she like literally goes to live with him. And I'm thinking, if you're like kind of being protected by the police, I don't think you go live in their homes with them. I think they kind
of she doesn't go to his home right away. That's later in the episode. At this point, he says, okay, take her to the hotel marina. We'll keep her there until we get eyes on the perp.
Oh, so she must have just been hanging out with him, because there's several scenes where they're like cooking dinner together at his house. And I remember thinking, like, I don't know if that's protocol.
That does come later.
Okay, so good to know. So they are semi-professional about this, and they put her in a hotel.
Right. So, and there's only, of course, they'd walk in, and TC is like, there's 140 rooms in this hotel, and not one of the rooms has two beds in it.
Oh my gosh, I remember that. Yes, that is flashing back to me, because he was like acting like he didn't want to sleep in the same bed. And she's laying it on thick, right. You guys. She's also being very flirtatious. Rebecca is working this victimization to her benefit, and she's just like TC, like caressing him and just really making it hard for this guy. But for some reason, he thought that it was gonna, he's like, let's keep it professional. And I'm like, TC, you were the one that wanted to do this. You knew you were going to get seduced.
That's one thing that I really, really wanted to bring up because it's a little bit troubling to me. Like, she's just been through actually two traumas. She's already been robbed in the middle of the day by the guy on rollerblades. Mm-hmm. Now she gets shot at by a trench coat guy and sees Stan getting shot. And she gets
that lettuce fly.
Literally all she wants to do is fuck TC. And I'm like, you have just... I mean, and it's not even a little bit. She's laughing. She's flirting. She's like, let's take a shower together. He's like, girl, let me just have some space. And she's like, oh, maybe I need a cold shower. And I'm, it just feels so...
Can I make it up to you?
I'm supposed to be working.
And you wouldn't mix work with pleasure.
I promise, Lieutenant.
Is he here?
You know what I mean, Becky. We gotta be careful.
Always such a boy scout.
Like, bitch, you just got... You almost just died. Like, you literally got almost shot by a shotgun. If Stan hadn't been there, you'd be dead. You're not, like, rethinking your priorities, your life. Do you really want to go to the jewelry district now? Is that something you want to continue to do? Or do you want to move back? Rebecca, you seductress of the night.
She's got the throbs.
She's got the throbs. TZ's got the throbs right now.
And it's not that I'm saying there's anything wrong with her sex drive or her wanting to have sex with TC. I'm not slut-shaming her in any way. It's just the circumstance. I guess everybody deals with shock in a different way. Maybe you get, like, hypersexual if you're processing a trauma. I don't know. But...
Well, that thing, there is that thing. Well, it's not as it's hypersexual, but what is it? Not Munchausen's. It's a... What's the one where it's where you like start to fall in love with your kidnappers, or like when trauma happens? You know what I'm talking about?
Oh yeah, Stockholm syndrome,
and you like kind of start to like have feelings for the people that are like either kidnapping you or holding you ransom or something.
But she's A, he's not kidnapping her, and B, they literally just walked into the hotel.
I know. I was just trying to make some kind of big, like, just trying to explain that away in some possible way. But yes, you're right. I don't know. I've never been in a situation where I've been shot at with a shotgun, so I couldn't say.
Something really, really important happens while they're in the hotel room, though, because this very first night that he's taking guard over her, someone shows up in the window in the moonlight.
It's the shotgun-wielding man. The scary shotgun-wielding man. He knows where she is. He's like, Bex, I got you tracked, girl. You don't think I'm smart enough? I don't know why I'm whispering right now. You don't think I'm smart enough to track you down, girl? Come on. And now you kind of know, like, oh, shit, this is personal. Because at first you were like, robbery, what's going on? But now you know. This guy's after Becca.
After we've already learned from TC, there's 140 rooms in this place. Somehow, shotgun guy finds the one room that they are staying in. And then, again... shoots in the general direction of Rebecca, but doesn't actually shoot Rebecca to kill her, just shatters some glass and then takes off on his motorcycle.
Man, exciting. So as TC's taking his little snooze and this shotgun-wielding man shows up the window, he shoots. And like we said, it's targeted at Rebecca's now. So we know that she knows something's going on. It's personal. He's out to get her. Shoots through the glass. Personal. And TC wakes up. Everything's a big fiasco. Rebecca's kind of shaken up. And of course, they call Palermo. Palermo comes over. And he's...
This is the next morning. The next morning, he shows up.
Yeah, the next morning, he shows up. And he's like, is everybody okay? How's it going? What's happening? And TC's like, well, Bex was really shaken up, but the paramedics gave her a sedative. She seems to be okay now. But...
Cut to Bex in the corner, just drooling completely
passed. I know. What sedatives do they give her? I'm curious. And how much? I'd be like, I'm really shaken up. I need a lot. He's like, she's a little shaken up. But I have a little idea, Palermo. I'm thinking...
I think she should stay with me.
TC.
Tony, it might be the safest place. This guy obviously has some kind of line on her.
Or he had her apartment staked out.
All right, that's my mistake.
That's the problem. Being this close to the witness can cloud your judgment.
I'll do whatever you say, okay? But she's even more insistent now that I stay with her.
Cut to her all drugged out. Damn. That was just a side note in my head.
Palermo, like, he tries so hard always to be like a hard ass, and then he immediately backs down every time. Do you really think that's a good idea? Yeah, I do. Oh, okay. Well, then I trust you. It's not like I'm the lieutenant or anything.
Well, do you think Palermo has any good ideas? I mean, again, we've noticed that this guy has nothing good running through his mind. Oh. Poor guy. We love you, but you're just not the best lieutenant.
So we meet up with Del Toro, who is having an introspective moment on the beach. He's just lounging on the grass, and he's deeply involved in watching two teams of lifeguards play V-ball on the beach. Mm-hmm. And I guess it's triggering maybe, I don't know if it's the competitive nature of the sport he's watching or what, but it does trigger some flashbacks. I think it's meant to imply that he's like remembering like many years over his boxing life, but it's just this, like the same three shots just over and over and over right? again.
His boxing career was like maybe three games and that was it when he was 10. But it just, they really,
But he's thinking hard about it. Well, he's thinking real hard about it.
He's getting the throbs watching those freaking lifeguards play too. It's like, what's that movie? Air. What's the gay one with Top Tom Gun? Cruise? Top Gun. It's some Top Gun. Volley. I know.
Air?
You know that movie Air? So yeah, he's thinking, and sure enough, he goes back to Palermo and he's
No, because something very important happens. He's watching the lifeguards, and then one very specific lifeguard by the name of Mackie Smith comes over to him and starts shit-talking him.
That's right.
And he's like, oh, I hear you're too scared to get involved. Oh, I hear you're not going to play the games this year, bud. And so, of course, that lights a fire under Palermo's ass, and he goes right to Palermo, and he's like, you know what? I'm in. And you know why I'm in? Because Palermo's like, well, you just told me you would do literally anything for this team, but not this. So what changed your mind? And he's like, you know what changed my mind.
Mackie Smith. He's just a little shit talker, and he got me all riled up, and now I want to beat him because I'm going to be fighting against Mackie Smith. And
Palermo's like, this is the greatest news I've ever heard. This has nothing to do with your personal journey. I said it backwards.
Oh, no. He was definitely thinking like, yeah, for sure, beat Mackie Smith. He was not thinking about the four free dinners at Hal's.
Yes, exactly. I was like, he's definitely not at all motivated by the Hal's dinners. Not at all. Palermo's no, he's like, yeah. Del Toro.
Yeah, Del Toro, you do your thing. I'm not thinking about that at all. I don't want that steak dinner at Hal's. Just you do your thing.
You know Hal's is not serving a steak dinner. You know Hal's is doing like a chicken fried steak or something, like a really shitty piece of meat, just deep fried. They're like, it's the worst.
It's like a Denny's.
Hal's. Yeah, that's exactly like what I was thinking, Denny's. The Grand Slam. It's also known as Denny's of the Boardwalk.
And it's actually just at the Waterfront Bar and Grill. It's just all the same thing. So Palermo's living his best life. He's so freaking excited that Del Toro decided to be in this boxing match. And he's like, what do you need? And Del Toro's like, I need a heavy bag. I need some ropes.
I need gloves.
Basically everything. And Palermo's like, great. Elvis is on it. And we're like, Elvis?
Elvis has been MIA for the last like three episodes. I thought truly that he just did not test well with audiences. So he just like slowly phased him out. But never fear, when there's equipment to be procured, Elvis is there.
I know. I don't know why you would think he didn't hit well with audiences. Like a creepy, vaguely European, like very strange
bike expert
character that lives in the garage of an old burned down firehouse that's now a police station.
And so Del Toro's like, I really need to get to training. Like, this is really important. And Del Toro's so stoked. He's like, this is all my wildest dreams coming true. But your training cannot interfere with your job whatsoever.
Even though I pressured you so hard to do this, and I'm so mad, and I want those four fucking free dinners at Hal's. By the way, you still have a job to do, so don't let this take up too much of your time.
Oh, and we learn a really, really sneaky little thing. Not only has he been pressuring Del Toro to be boxing this whole time, after Del Toro says, I'm in, meet me at the firehouse or whatever, Del Toro gets on his bike, rides past the lifeguard stand, Mackie Smith standing on the lifeguard lookout, and he's like, hey, Mackie, thanks for your help. So they set it up for Mackie to light the fire under Del Toro's behind.
Oh, sneakers.
Freaking Palermo sneakers wants thing. That goddamn four dinners at hell.
Del Toro will do anything. Oh, I wish more than anything sometime in my life I could do like, because what's next is basically the greatest montage of all time. The get back in shape, get back into it's pure Rocky. Mm-hmm. All of a sudden he's got a beanie on, he's sweating, he's running up all these steps. It's your classic montage of getting back into the game.
Picture Flashdance when she's dancing in her studio. Mm-hmm. I'm a maniac. And she's sweating and her feet are moving at like 5,000 miles an hour and just sweat is gushing down. That's exactly Del Toro's moment of glory.
And it's the best because there's these little scenes where he's like punching the punching bag really quick and little Elvis's baby head is just looking like every scene. Elvis is just behind him somewhere. And I don't know if Elvis is training with him or just like monitoring, but he's just back there, big old bushy-tailed, bright-eyed looking at Del Toro train. It's the best montage.
Like, maybe he has some frame of reference because remember how he used to fix the bikes for the Olympic team in his home country?
He knows a thing or two about training for sure.
Yeah, so he's like, listen, I know it's not, you know, sport for sport. However, mm-hmm. I could probably give you some tips that are in general would be helpful for this. So, you know, he's just the resident pseudo expert.
Ever since you said Flashdance, I just keep getting distracted because when she was eating that lobster, it just keeps flashing into my head. Because remember, I watched, no pun intended there with the Flashdance, but remember how I watched it with you for the first time? I had never seen it till like a year ago.
I was so happy to show you that movie. I love it so much.
And there's
much.
A scene where she's like slopping down that, right? She's like eating lobster at the nice dinner. And then she's like,
sexual.
Yes. And she's trying to make it. Oh.
The weirdest choice because it's like all like stringy and buttery and she's like wrapping it around her tongue and just like using her hands and she thinks it's so sensual and he's so turned on by it and it's just like, just imagine the greasiest mouth, like nothing about it is sexual at all.
Okay, story time real quick. I never really have eaten at Red Lobster before. I know it's been around. I wanted to go. So when I was visiting a very good friend in Utah, we decided to go and we sit down and I'm like, bring me the, this was back in the day when I was still eating meat. I was like, bring it the biggest, juiciest lobster you have. Because I was thinking it was like a lobster tail, like a tail. Right, and then they come out and you do it. No, he comes out and he's like, which lobster do you want? And they're these giant real lobsters. They're dead already. And I'm like, oh my God, I didn't realize that. So they had already cooked it. And I'm like, I don't know how to break this open. I don't know how to do this. Yeah. They give you the little crackers. So then he's like, do you want me to do it for you? And I'm like, well, can you help me? So then he doesn't do it himself. He goes in the back and gets like a kitchen worker. And he comes back with the dirty tray. He's sweating profusely. And he's cracking the lobster and throwing little pieces
of
lobster.
Like it's the hardest job he's
ever had. Yes, and cracking little. And he's throwing little pieces of lobster meat. And it's hitting my plate and sliding across. And then I would eat it. And I'd be like... And then he's like, crack. And it was slimy and he'd pull it out and then slop it on my plate. It would slide a little bit. And then I would just pick it up with my fingers and eat it. And my friend sitting across from me, dying. Her face was like, what the fuck are you doing? And the guy's like breathing really heavy, like, and cracking it. And I swear to God, in my memory, it was like a tray of like dirty dishes and like rags and stuff. And he's just slowly cracking that lobster, throwing a little piece of lobster, slimy lobster meat at me.
Imagine you just like a little puppy.
Yes. And I would just like eat it. And then we'd just sit there silently waiting for him to throw the next slop of meat. Yes. And the saddest thing is after we were supposed to go meet my friend's family at a park and I couldn't go because I was so sick. I got so nasty sick, and it was the grossest experience at Red Lobster. Everything we do is for
the seafood lover in you. Red Lobster for the seafood lover in you.
Oh, you got sick by dirty dishes and a sweaty guy throwing lobster into your gullet.
I'm not speaking for all Red Lobsters. This was a one-off experience, but I swear to God, he got an old dish tray with like a busboy thing, and that's what he was using to like prop the lobster up. It was so bizarre, and it was just the most uncomfortable. And I was like, I can do it now. I got it now. I can do it. And he just was like, no.
He's like, no, you asked for it.
You gotta do it this way.
Open your mouth, sweetie pie.
I know, and it would just literally hit. He'd slop it, and it would slide across my plate. Oh, God. Anyway, that's what I was thinking when you said Flashdance montage of Del Toro. Then I got flashback, went to lobster eating. You get the idea.
Oh my gosh. So, yeah. Ooh, okay. That's amazing.
Back
I will
to,
never
back to Del Toro. Just boom, boom, boom. Elvis
we meet
Palermo.
That's
and Palermo.
On replay in my mind.
Oh, right now it's replaying in my mind with little Elvis. It's little bug eyes. So Palermo's in the office and he gets a tip from somebody basically. And this tip gives us a little bit more information about our shotgun wielding criminal. And basically they say his name is Sergei, that he at one point was working with a partner and that he's kind of maybe trying to find that partner. So Palermo's like, you know, he's getting out his 500 piece puzzle and he's putting the pieces together immediately.
And we know with Palermo that puzzle is
slow sweet baby
going.
Oh sweet, he probably He's just, all he can think about is Hal still, and it's just overcome
He's
his
like,
mind.
My stomach is growling. I'm too distracted to put these puzzle pieces together. I need those for dinner.
Well, he is actually so distracted with putting the puzzles together that he's like, you know what? I'm just going to fucking call TC and have him put this puzzle together himself. So he gives TC a ring. Right? He gives TC a ring and he's like, TC, this is the information I have. Figure it out, bud. So TC's like, I'm going to start questioning Bex a little bit.
Yeah, because TC and Bex are, remember, they had this whole ruse to get back to TC's house because he thinks his apartment's the safest place for her to be. So they've just been cohabitating for a couple of days, just having like intimate dinners, just complete relaxing, but he's still very much on duty.
I have one question now that you say that, because Del Toro's montage made it seem like it was months and months and months.
He's training for so long.
Del Toro was training for months, but then has she just been living with TC for months, or is this you know what? I don't question the continuity of Pacific Blue, but let's just say
they're very fuzzy.
Let's just say Del Toro looked like he was training for 10 months.
It really is true. So TC is having, like, it's kind of this romantic, intimate night. He's like, hey, is there anything you can remember that you're not telling me? Like, what did the shooter smell like? Do you remember anything he said or anything about the way he looked? And she's playing coy. And then he says,
does the name Sergei mean anything to you?
No, why?
We think that might be the name of the guy who's been shooting at us.
Really?
Yeah.
Let's find that out.
Palermo got a tip.
It means nothing to me.
You sure? You never heard Stan Brock mention the name?
Never.
And she immediately turns to him and is like, are you going to get me drunk and take advantage of me?
Classic.
Which, first of all, Bex. Gross.
Oh, yeah. But she's totally trying to distract him with sex. And because TC doesn't know, he's just like, yes, okay.
And I mean, I'm just going to plant the seed in the minds of the audience here and say, with how aggressive she is about, like, in the middle of this trauma of being hunted down with a shotgun-wielding psycho, that all she can think about is having sex with TC, don't you think TC, as a professional, would be like, huh?
A little fishy. Some little fishy's going on.
But he doesn't, because he's TC. He doesn't. So she, and he does, bless his little heart, he tries. He's like, this is professional. And he's like, and she's like, but I want you so bad. And he's like, is that what you want? And she's like, what do you want? And then they do it. Of course, TC was not going to hold out. Of course.
So that night, as they're laying in bed after they've just went to Pound Town, she's...
Because, of course, TC falls asleep.
Oh, yeah.
All men
he's done.
Do right
and
after sex.
She's like, I'm going to get up, make all the noise, get completely ready, put on my clothes, walk out this man's home, and he's not going to wake up. But she's thinking this because she's like, shit, they're on to me. Something's going on with her.
Right. So she sneaks out in the middle of the night. This is also the second time he's been a terrible watch person / protector, because the first time the shotgun guy found them in the hotel and shot at them. This time she steals his keys and leaves his house while he's unconscious.
And I'm sorry. I'm not the deepest sleeper in the world, but I would definitely, like, she like full on goes, takes a shower, puts on clothes, puts on makeup. Like, I'm not that dead asleep that I'm not going to hear somebody like exit my home. Like, making all that noise, it's a small apartment. I mean, come on, TC. He's not sleeping with earplugs in. Maybe he's just so exhausted from sex that he can't wake up.
Listen.
But she's like full on getting ready, blow drying her hair. And he's just like sound asleep. No one knows.
He makes love like it is his day job. So yeah, he's fucking tired when it's over. He's like, that was the hardest I have worked all day. I haven't protected you one bit, but I sure did make sweet love to you. So he's out of it, dude. He's out of it.
And she's on her way to the hospital, because now that she's like a little suspicious that like things are kind of there, the puzzle pieces are coming together.
It's catching up with her.
And it's catching up. And we're learning that something's going on with Bex. And so she goes to the hospital to visit Pat. What was the name?
Stan.
Oh, Stan. I was going to say Pat.
Remember, Pat. Stan was the restaurant owner's last manager that was shot at in the first interaction with the shotgun wielder. So he's been unconscious. He's on life support. He's laying in that hospital bed. And she's, I mean, it kind of harkens back to Baywatch Glacier Bay situation.
Oh, the deathbed monologues, the coma monologues, mm-hmm. that everyone who comes and visits someone in a coma confesses all their sins and just says everything in a very long, intense monologue.
Right. So she's circling his also. You're not allowed to walk into a hospital in the middle. There's visiting hours, number one.
I was going to say, like, it's that same thing like Baywatch Hawaii. Like, you just walk in. She knows exactly where his room is. Mm-hmm. It's the middle of the night, you guys. It's implied that it is like 2 a.m. She walks mm-hmm. straight into Stan's freaking hospital bedroom, and she's doing her monologue. But the best part is, guess who pops her head, little head in the door? Chris Kelly.
Isn't it a little late to be visiting?
Oh, I know. I couldn't sleep. I wanted to check on Stan. I've been so worried about him.
Uh-huh.
What are you doing here?
Oh, well, the doctor called and said Stan might be coming too, so I rushed down here to see if we could talk to him. We wanted to do that ever since the shooting.
Oh, then he's going to be all right.
Yeah. Yeah, I hope so.
Chris is also feeling those tingly spider senses, like, girl, you did not just come down here to see if this guy... I think Rebecca was trying to see if he came out of the coma because he's going to know something.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I think.
But Chris is back at the station the next morning talking to Corey, which Colin brought up.
Oh my gosh, I have to set the scene. So they're having, like, you know, in TV shows where they have like casual either like girl talk or something, you know, by the water cooler, or they're in the kitchen getting coffee.
Or they're in their bathroom, on their bathroom break.
No, so Chris and Corey are at the precinct and they have these huge bulky men in handcuffs and they're just talking casual girl talk as they're like putting these men in holding cells and like slamming it and locking it. And she's like, Corey, I have something on my mind. And they're just like, and these guys, it just cracked me up because it's just these two women putting all these men together as like the something to do to bring this dialogue to life.
Mm-hmm. This was their casual interaction at work.
I'm telling you, she was going to pull the plug. You don't know that. Oh, I can feel it. You should have seen the way she was looking at him. You know, we have to do something about this. Tell Palermo or TC.
You're going to tell TC that you staked out his house. That you followed this girl to the hospital and that you think that she was going to murder Stan Brock.
Yes.
You can't prove any of that, Chris. You need hard evidence.
How could you be so naive?
Could you be so certain, huh?
All right, I'll tell you what. Let's see if TC knew that she left in the middle of the night last night. Okay?
Fine.
And Corey's like, well, you can't tell him that you've been keeping an eye on him. Like, that's not going to go over well. And I, on the other hand, feel like, Corey, this is very important information that the woman that you are guarding night and day has slipped into a hospital in the middle of the night to supposedly pull the plug on Stan, but whatever. So Chris is debating how she's going to approach this with TC without him freaking out.
So later on, Palermo runs into Mackie Smith, and Mackie Smith starts to tell him, you know what, this guy that we were going to have box, something happened to him, and we're going to replace him with this other guy. His name is...
Damien Kruger, perhaps you've heard of him.
So Palermo goes and tells this information to Del Toro, and Del Toro is like, hell no, I am not fighting that guy. He's an old rival. He kind of is what made me stop boxing altogether.
Yeah, he basically... I guess maybe won the gold gloves after Del Toro's round in the ring. I don't know the deets, but he scared the shit out of Del Toro, and Del Toro's basically like, "I've been bested. I'm out at the age of 20."
And that's when he
hung up my gloves.
That's when he gives his amazing speech to Palermo.
Before Damien Kruger, all I could ever think about is how hard I could hit a guy. And after that, all I could think about is how hard a guy could hit me.
Oh my gosh, it's the best speech ever.
Oh yeah, we're putting it online for sure. So, needless to say, Del Toro's going through his own struggle. Should he or shouldn't he? So he decides to actually call this guy up.
He decides to, just happens to decide that the best way to deal with this conflict is to go to dinner with this guy.
Dinner and like, drinks and have some martinis in like a low candlelit room. Like Del Toro really just wants to hash it out.
He's got his best tight tank on. Mm-hmm. He's got his best gold chain on. He is looking so good.
And he's...
But it's only just to settle this old boxing thing, you guys. It has nothing to do with romance. It has nothing to do with it. He just needs to settle this.
And we'll say, though, I know we said earlier that we're kind of reaching far for Del Toro being homosexual, but there are a few key points in this conversation that might lead you to believe the same. Just take a little listen.
So, I heard you give up fighting.
Yeah, 6 years ago, some creep from Pittsburgh, he knocks my lights out. His manager put Menelini in the gloves. That'd teach you to rein you down, huh? Yeah, it took it in the forehead pretty bad. Doctor said I couldn't fight anymore, so I retired.
Wow.
How about you? I remember you had a pretty good left hook.
You know, you ended my boxing career.
Well, hey, look, if I hurt you, I'm sorry.
You know what? It wasn't physical.
So, you been doing any training?
Yeah, a little.
You?
A little bit. I guess there's no way out of this one.
Hey, you know when I'm in there, I gotta...
I wouldn't expect anything less.
Good luck.
Same to you.
All right. Okay. Come on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, regardless, Del Toro goes through this. He meets this guy. He's like, you know what? He scared me in the past. He scares me now, but I got to confront my fears. I met him in person and overcame this like personal conflict. Now I got to do this professional boxing conflict. Because
he sees the guy as just a human.
Yeah. He's just a regular guy.
He stopped seeing him as like a big, scary boxer and sees him as the kind, loving, just lover that he's always wanted.
I know, right? He's just the kind, handsome, broad-shouldered, nice hands, smooth skin, hairy chest man that he's always just wanted to be friends with.
So after all this training for Del Toro, he ends up boxing in the match and you never find out who wins. Like, there's all this buildup, but you know what? It doesn't matter because his romance is,
I think it's just about romance. Yeah, his sexuality is what won. Because, yeah, it builds up and then you see him boxing, but it just kind of leaves you on the edge of your seat. Old PB.
That's okay, though. All we needed was I was going to say nail in the coffin about his sexuality, but that sounds negative.
A pin in the cushion. I don't know.
I was going to say the last color in the rainbow.
Oh, geez, no. Okay.
Anyhoozle, we're going to get back to the main plot because this is what's important. So Chris does finally confront TC and she's like, listen, I have a real bad feeling about Rebecca. Do you notice that every time you try to ask her about the crime, she just like tries to bone you? Is that not connecting with you at all? Are you not seeing a pattern in her behavior or anything? And he's like, you're being crazy. And she's like, you yourself told me that people don't change. She hurt you once. She was ruthless and relentless. I have a feeling she's still the same person. And right at that moment, Corey pops in with some very pertinent information because who has woken up?
Stan the man. He woke up. He got his lettuce in the walk-in and he's like, Rebecca, she knows that man. He was shooting at her, but not to kill her, to scare her. He doesn't really talk like that. I don't know why I'm doing that voice. I was doing an old decrepit
British
man.
Guy?
But basically he says that they definitely have some kind of connection and this dude was not shooting to kill her. He was shooting to scare her and he knows it. So Sergey and Rebecca, his name is Sergey. We found that out earlier. They just know each other. Something's going on.
Yep. And so at this point, Palermo, bless his little heart, he's really finishing off that puzzle and he realizes, oh, she's just the distraction. They pulled off a jewelry heist together. She betrayed Sergey by stealing all the diamonds. And now Sergey is hunting for her to get them back, which is exactly why she wanted to get to TC's house the whole entire time, because then she would have the diamonds at his house and they'd be safe.
It was all a damn ruse, you guys. Rebecca set the whole thing up. She even set up the guy at the beginning, roller skates that came in and she set that all up just so TC would come and she would be under his care. What a little
thing,
manipulative B word.
Busy bee? Is that what you're going to say? Busy bee?
So then TC goes. He goes to find her at the boat dock. And as he's going to find her, he runs into this gun-wielding guy who's trying, obviously, to hunt her down and get her before she leaves on this boat. They have this altercation.
Hang in there. Hang in there. Come on. Hang in there.
Dock C.
What do you mean, Dock C? What do you mean,
Dock C? She always gets people to do what she wants.
Who is she? How you love her? Your wife? Your partner?
She has all three.
TC shoots Sergey. I mean, which is traumatic in and of itself.
Well, Sergey kind of shoots himself with his own shotgun. Doesn't it go off and like when they're at wrestling, it kind of goes off? That's what Alex said.
Oh, so I get. Well, you're like, so the rumor is. I thought it was, I think I'm thinking of the Phoenix where he's like, stop or I'll shoot. But you're right. They get in a tussle on the docks. Of course, everything happens on the docks.
Everything happens on the dock.
Because that's where the crime takes place. But
Sergey accidentally shoots himself.
He gets shot. TC's like cradling him. And he's like, what is your connection to Rebecca? Was she your lover, your partner, your wife? And he was like, she was all three.
Oh, it's so sentimental.
And then he passes away.
He passes away in TC's arms.
And TC's heartbroken because Rebecca played him like a fiddle.
So he goes and finds her at the docks. She's on a boat. She's getting ready to get the hell out of Dodge. She's done.
Yeah.
She's done. And she's like, look, dude, I did it all. I set it all up. Some people never change. Actually, she's like, you can come with me, and trying to seduce him more. And he's like, bitch, What is going on with you?
He's like, last time you left me was in the middle of the night, and now you're trying to leave me on the docks in the middle of the night with your bag of diamonds. What's the deal?
After I just got an altercation with your husband and he shot himself, you have no remorse for that.
Yeah. So she's on her way to the jewelry district, I guess, to deliver the diamonds. I mean, I guess
that's why she wanted to get to the jewelry district so bad in the beginning.
Yeah, so he's basically like, you knew I was a sap. You spotted me from a mile away. I cannot believe you did this to me. You could have just left me out of it, but no. So she tries to seduce him one last time, of course, like Colin said, but no dice. TC's not going to get played a third time. He arrests her, and her crime spree's over. Her days in the jewelry district were not long.
Oh, it's so good. Oh, what a good one. And I'm still kind of mad about Del Toro not knowing who won that match. But I think we all know in his heart he won that match.
I think we do, too.
The next episode's just Palermo mad about not being able to go to Howl's. She's like, I really wanted that dinner.
It's Sunday night, and he's like, I'm so freaking hungry, and I'd have dinner right now if it weren't for Del Toro.
Doesn't Sheila, your wife, own a restaurant? Come on.
Really, I mean, of all the things, like, he literally has a relationship with someone who owns a food establishment. So the last thing he needs to be worrying about is who's going to feed him, but whatever. But there's also, I mean, just keep in your back pocket that we're learning all kinds of really interesting stuff about Del Toro this episode. But also next episode, we learn some more interesting stuff about him.
We learned some very more interesting stuff. Cool.
I know. As soon as I said it, I was like, nope. But they're just unfolding. They need ways to move the plot along. And so all of a sudden you just learn these like really important facts about people.
Yeah, there's
that just
no like
come out of the woodwork.
There's no character arches. It's just like they're like one character, one-sided, but they have all these things in the past that developed who they are today.
So fast.
Well, thanks for checking in with us, guys. We'll see you next week.
We hope that you enjoyed this wild ride and that if by chance you meet an old flame or a mysterious person from your past and all they can think about is getting you into bed, guys, think twice. Think twice. That's all.
Think twice, don't.
Think twice, no dice.
I was trying to.